I had a ministry friend call me 2 weeks ago, and he said, I decided I would watch your church service. I said, okay. And all I heard were kids. And your poor song leader, he's trying to lead songs, and all I hear are kids, they're jabbering, and a couple of them are mad, and there's more jabbering, and it just seems that it's your place is full of kids. How do you do it? And my response to him is, that's what has kept me for so long. One of my favorite things about this church is the amount of little children we have running around this place. Because it is the reminder to me of what we're doing that is so important to the kingdom. Whether there are children who are 17 and 18 and graduating from high school, or whether there are children that are 3 and 4 and we're running up the aisle because they can't wait to get back and learn about Jesus a little more. And that thrills me that our church is like that. And so your noise of your children doesn't bother any of our song leaders. It doesn't bother anybody who gives communion talks. And it certainly doesn't bother the preacher. So keep bringing them, and we will love having them. I think the reason children matter so much is because they matter to Jesus. One of my very favorite verses about Jesus comes in Matthew chapter 18. And he says, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." That was one of those moments in the ministry of Jesus where they were bringing children to him so he could bless them and encourage them and pray over them and do all the things that I imagine Jesus would do over children. And they matter. And they matter a lot more than we have ever thought. And so I love that we focus on them so much. Now Solomon also liked to talk to the young. And when Solomon talks to the young in Ecclesiastes, he's not talking to the 3 and 4 and 5 year olds. He's talking to the older. And he's looking at a group of young, maybe within Israel, that might work in his court. Who knows? And he's going to give them some counsel. And I just want to share quickly this morning a couple of things that come out of the end of Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And so here is what Solomon writes. He says, "Light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years anyone may live, let them enjoy them all. But let them remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. For everything to come is meaningless. You who are young, be happy." Interesting line. "So you who are young, be happy while you're young. And let your heart give you the joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. But know that for all of these things, God will bring you into judgment. So then, banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigor are meaningless." Okay, I don't love that very last line. We'll talk about it in a second. But I think he says some important things. The one thing that I think that is loud and clear out of what Solomon is saying in that little section on talking to the young is, don't waste it. You're going to hear me say, probably in a couple of different ways, but you're only young once, right? You never get to go back. Now, I'll be honest, I have no desire to go back to when I was in high school. I don't have much desire to go back to when I was in college, for that matter. But I kind of miss the 25 to 30 range. But you're only young once. And so Solomon is going to look at these young people, and I think one of the things he's saying is, don't grow old before your time. Every now and then I come across a kid who may be 16 or 17, but he acts like he's 30 or 35, or she. And in the midst of that, I always enjoy that in some ways, because you're sitting across the table or in a Bible class with what feels like an adult, but yet I part of me wants to say, don't grow old too fast, because I think being young is a gift from God. And so whether we are young, whether we are raising young, whether we are grandparenting young, I hope we can learn a couple of things. Because youth is something that's never given again. And so whether it's our children or our grandchildren, let's listen to Solomon's counsel. And maybe going that direction, we can learn a lesson or two. Some of the most valuable lessons I've ever learned in my life have come from the mouths of kids. And sometimes they're kids who are 3 and 4 and 5, and they say something kind of smart alecky in the midst of a VBS class. And before I know it, when I've thought about what they've said, they're dead on. Or maybe it's like the two young men that we've had here. I've been sitting in a teen class talking to teenagers or college students, and they'll see the same text that I've seen all of my life from a whole different vantage point. And I'll learn something new and important. So let's pay attention to what Solomon says. I think the first thing he says is don't waste your youth by forgoing risk. Okay, I would love to be able to control everything. Most of you know that almost every preacher I know is a control freak. They like to have everything just so, and everything's got to kind of be lined up, and it's all got to go the right direction and smooth, and when it goes off that, it drives preachers nuts, and this one especially. I would love to be able to control everything, but life isn't controlled. And it's pretty obvious from when you're young that life isn't always controlled. And I think what Solomon is trying to say is don't be paralyzed by the reality that life can't be controlled. Okay, one of the things I love about kids, and especially teenagers, is almost every teenager I have ever known does not study for the test until the night before the test. Now think about your own kids for a second. Caleb, I'm going to pick on you one more time. When do you study for the test, the night before or all week? The night before, because he doesn't want to miss out on anything, right? I mean, I remember one of our high school students said, why should I study all week long? If Jesus were to come, I would have wasted that whole time studying. And he had an accurate assessment. We got to realize and we got to see that life isn't controlled, and we shouldn't be paralyzed by the fear of what might come. But let's live life. Okay, going earlier in chapter 11, Solomon writes this. He says, whoever watches the wind will not plant, whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. And then he continues, sow your seed in the morning, and at evening let your hands not be idle, for you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well. It's almost to me like Solomon is saying, okay, we have this choice in life. We can sit there and do nothing, or we can take some bold steps. We can do what God has called us to do, and if we wait for perfect conditions, if we wait for it to be just right may never come. And I think Solomon is saying, don't waste your youth by forgoing risk, because there's a difference between just sitting there and getting in the game. See, there are some things that we talk about. We talk about good and bad decisions. We talk about right and wrong decisions, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But there's also right and left decisions. There's God saying, here's your life in front of you, and you can do this or you can do this. You can make this choice that would glorify God, or you can make this choice that will glorify God. You've got all of these options in front of you. Don't just sit on the bench and watch them all go by. Take a risk. Okay, let me give you a story that in some ways haunted me because I saw what that parent was saying. So a parent, again, not that goes here, but a parent had come to me and said, my child wants to be a missionary in Africa, and it's killing me. And I said, well, how have you raised them? Well, we have raised them to follow God, and we've raised them to be people who tell the story of Jesus, and we have raised them, hopefully, for the rest of their lives to honor Him. And I said, well, in a sense, you were preparing them to do exactly what they want to do. And their question to me was, would you want Jonah to? And then I've got to face a different question. And one of the things I wanted to encourage them is if we're going to raise them to honor God, and we're going to raise them in the right way, and we're going to teach them right for wrong, I think we also need to say, you find what really matters in your life, and as long as that goes with the will of God, you take that step forward. And I wonder if in our desire to keep our kids safe, in our desire to limit if they might hurt their knee or scrape up their elbows, that we have maybe created children who aren't willing to take a risk. A couple studies that I've been reading have talked about that there's more anxiety right now in the generation of our high school and college students than ever before. And what we've done is we've sheltered and we've protected. And it's not the Andy Griffith days. Remember, Andy Griffith let that kid go out from the time the sun came up till the time the sun came down and finally whistled him in. And now we hover and we protect. And maybe in doing that, and I'm not, don't hear that you shouldn't be protecting your kids, and don't hear that we shouldn't be trying to keep them safe. But have we created kids that are a little nervous to take that step out into the world? Okay, one of the things I love about these two young men is they're not willing to take, I mean, they're not concerned about taking that step out into the world. They got a business idea and they got a business plan and they are ready to run with it. Find something that matters to you. And it doesn't matter if you're 10 years old or if you're 17 or 18 years old or maybe you're 30. I think you're still young when you're 30. You find those things that make a difference and you pursue them. It's interesting that Jesus, well, let's not talk about Jesus yet. When rabbis in Jesus' day, they would bring a group of followers, and you would walk in the steps of the rabbi. And what's intriguing is when the rabbi got his rabbihood, I don't know if that's the right phrase to use, but that's what we're going to call it. When he officially became a rabbi, he would start finding people that would join him in his work. Do you know who he found? He found 16 and 17 and 18-year-old kids. That as he was about to go do his work and start his service in the kingdom, he would find those who were young and ready to go. And I think Jesus does the same thing. That there's a reason Jesus chooses the 12 disciples, and I don't think any of the disciples were over the age of 25, to be frankly honest, and I don't think they're anywhere near the same age as Jesus. But yet he chooses these and he says, come on, let's go. And they're going to change a world because of it. And so what I want to say, whether we're 30, 18, or if we got a 10-year-old that didn't run down the hall, don't live life scared. Don't live life where you're so afraid to take a step out in faith that you never make that move. So live life. But the second thing I think Solomon says is don't waste your life by forfeiting joy. Okay, you've heard me talk a lot about happiness in the midst of this little Ecclesiastes study. That's a word, happiness and joy, that aren't the same, but Solomon has kind of used them in and out of this book. And I think we need to find some joy. We need to find those things in our life that make us happy. We need to find those things that bring a smile upon our face and cause us to say, look at what God has done. Again, notice a couple of his words that we've already heard a little bit of. But you who are young, be happy while you're young and let your heart give you the joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see, but know that all of these things will bring you into judgment. We'll talk about that second thing in a second. One writer said this, life is a gift from God. Take everything in and live it to its fullest. I want all of us to do that, to be frankly honest. To realize that life is a gift from God, to take everything in and live it to its fullest. Solomon would write some other stuff in this book. He'd say in chapter 3 these words. He would say, I know that there's nothing better for people to do than to be happy and do good while they live. So it's not just about being happy. Let's hear all of that. That each of them may eat and drink and find their satisfaction in all their toil. This is a gift from God. Or chapter 8, Solomon would write this. He would say, so I commend the enjoyment of life, because there's nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of their life that God has given them under the sun. Or one more. He's kind of repeating a theme. Chapter 9. Go eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for God has already approved of what you do. Now I need to put a caveat in there that we'll talk about in a second. There are some things I think God calls us to do. And there are some decisions we make that are important, that are right and wrong decisions. But notice, he just says, you enjoy the life that God has given you. I was laughing. I was probably 6 or 7 Wednesdays ago. We were doing hamburgers and chips or hot dogs and chips or something. And we had one of our young kids that was just, he was so excited. and he was kind of, he was doing this little dance, this little jig in front of the food table. And I asked his mom, why is he so excited? And his mom said these exact words: he saw that there were Cheetos in the box. Okay, I want you to live like there are Cheetos in the box. That when you see the life that is before you, and now I don't care if you're 10, 17, or 18, or if you're 90, you live like there's Cheetos at the end of the line, and you love Cheetos. You live where you see the life where God has placed you with, and you see what God has put all around you, and when you eat a good meal, you celebrate it because you know where it came from. When you cuddle on the couch with your wife and you watch Netflix for 2 hours, you realize what God has given you, and you celebrate those moments. When you walk down through a mountain trail and you see deer or antelope or elk in the distance, or you see a golf course, or you see fill in a million other blanks, enjoy it. Live it and be excited about it. And a lot of us older people need to learn a lesson from the kid who was doing a dance because there were Cheetos. Because we get bogged down and we get stuck in our forest of work and business and raising kids and doing family and doing church and all of the stuff that goes on around us, that we forget to celebrate some of the finest things that God has ever given us. Christians ought to know better than that, because we know who brought it to us. I mean, Christians shouldn't just pray before a meal. They ought to celebrate before it. And Christians shouldn't just be grateful for the spouses they have and the joy that comes in a married life. They should realize that this was a gift from God that He gave them. And Christians should enjoy all those moments where you're laughing and you're smiling and you're watching your kids do what your kids do. And Christians should enjoy life more than anybody else on the planet. Now again, within the framework of what God has said is right and wrong, but who should get it better than us? Another writer wrote this. He said, "Life is like manna. Today's blessings need to be enjoyed now because they will be gone tomorrow." Okay, you remember that story from the Old Testament, right? The people are kind of clamoring for bread, and so God says, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you bread every morning. And so 6 days a week, you're going to come out of your tent, and you're going to see the manna that tastes like honey. That sounds pretty good. I loved honeycomb as a church, and that's how I've always pictured manna. Nobody else ate honeycomb, huh? So that's kind of how I always pictured manna on the ground, is they'd come out of their tent, and the whole ground was covered in honeycomb, and they would gather enough for the day. Live it, my friends. Embrace it. And when those times are joyous and those times are ecstatic with happy, revel in those things and praise God for what He's done in the midst of them, because life isn't always going to be like that. Remember the line He said, there's going to be dark days ahead? There's going to be hard times. We know that. We live in a fallen world. There are going to be moments when our jobs aren't great, and there are going to be moments when we struggle in our families, and there are going to be moments in doctor's offices, and there are going to be moments across the board. But I think what Solomon is trying to say is, when stuff that is good, that comes from the hand of God, comes to you, you celebrate it, and you revel in it, and maybe you do a little bit of a Cheeto dance. But the third thing is, I think we got to see a spiritual side. Live life by embracing God. Okay, we go to chapter 12 that we talked about last week as we were aging. He says this: remember your Creator in the days of your youth. I love that line. Remember your Creator when you're young. Okay, sidebar for just 30 seconds. That's why I love what we're doing with kids. That's why I love what we do in Journeyland. That's why I love what we do in our newborn and our three-year-olds and our five-year-olds. And that's why I love what we do at VBS, is I think we are trying very, as hard as we possibly can, with the goodness of God behind us, to say to our kids, here's the God that we serve. And we want you more than anything else to embrace the same God that we've embraced, because we want them, from the time they are young, to know their Creator. But I think what also is being said by Solomon is, the best time to honor God is right now. Right now. Okay, every now and then I've run into a couple of those kids that says, I'll honor God when I'm done with college. because I want to go have a good time. I'll honor God when I get married. I'll honor God when I'm holding my first child. And I'll start following God when, and then they fill in a blank, and maybe it's when they're this old, or they've got this job, or they're in this place. And part of what I want to say is someday usually doesn't come. And almost everybody who has come to me with that line, okay, I'm going to choose to follow God when I'm finished with college, or I'm going to choose to follow God when I get married, or I'm going to choose to follow God, almost all of those incidents where that has happened, they still have yet to choose to follow God. And that breaks my heart. Because I think Solomon is saying the best day to choose to follow him is the day that is right before you. Now he's saying live life, and he's saying take a risk, and he's saying take a step out in faith and trust that God is going to be there and do the things that God has called you to do, understanding the parameters of what God wants. But you realize first and more than anything else, the best time is now. He says in chapter 11, going back a couple of verses from this verse, he says, "You who are young, be happy while you're young. Let your heart give you the joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see, but know that all of these things God will bring into judgment." Okay, in some ways that line might scare us at the end. But I think what Solomon is trying to say is you live it all under the parameters of here is what God wants you to be and how God wants you to live. And I don't think he's saying be carefree. See, there's this tendency to want to be careless and carefree when we're young. And I really think that Solomon is trying to say you can be carefree as long as you see God encircling everything. I don't talk too often from the pulpit about how we tried to raise our child, but I'm going to for a second. One of the things that Jonah and I had lots of conversations in the car about, when it's just the two of us, picking him up from school and bringing him here so he could run around this building from the time he was little till about the time he went to college, was every decision I want you to make, I want you to make it in a way not to make me happy, but to make God happy. That there are going to be decisions you make that do not bring a smile to my face, and we'll talk about those things. And there are decisions that you are going to make that are going to bring a smile upon my face and a that a boy deep within my heart. But I want more than you trying to please your dad, I want you to try to please God. And I don't want that just for my kid. I want it for all of our kids. My favorite line from David West was, this was probably 20 years ago, is we're sitting, I've probably used this before, but we're sitting in the small fellowship hall and we're praying over a kid who's really, really sick. And David says something to the extent of, they're all my kids because they are all our children. And that's why they matter so much. That's why this church does everything they can to try to grow them in their faith and to move them along in their journey to make God the centerpiece, because we realize how much they matter. And I want your decision. We just have teenagers in the room. I'm just going to point to teenagers. We got a whole group that's sitting there. I want every decision you make. I want those who are sitting in the back who are high school age. I want these guys that were just up here a second ago. I want every decision you make to bring a smile upon the face of God. And for God to say, those are my children, created in my image, built to serve the Lord in massive ways, and then to use us to do his will. I want to finish with a couple lines from David. Well, I assume at least one is from David, from the psalmist. It says this in Psalm 148. Young men and young women, old men and old children. Sorry, I can't read. Young men and women, old men and children, let them praise the name of the Lord. For his name alone is exalted, and his splendor is above the earth and the heavens. And then Psalm 37. This one I know is David. Take delight in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your life. Take delight in the Lord. Okay, I've said earlier in the sermon that I want you to enjoy all that God has put in front of you. The thing I want you to enjoy the most, though, whether you're 10, 17, or 90, is I want you to enjoy God. C.S. Lewis famously wrote this line. He said, "If you don't enjoy God, all you do is endure." I don't want to just endure. I want to live. And I don't want to just live a life that says, "What's coming next?" I want to live a life saying, "What's coming next?" Because there's a difference in thinking what's coming next and what's going to fall and how's the ball going to drop to what's coming next and how is God going to bring. And I want us to live that way. And I want our children to live that way. Because it's those people that walk out the doors of the church and be the church to the rest of the world, who say to a world that here's what matters the most, and God is the centerpiece. So let's live our life, whether we're 10, 17, or 90. Let's not worry too much about staying young, but let's worry a lot more about staying close to God. And then if we're not in that little young population, let's find ways to how we can help them, help their parents, help their grandparents, be the beacon in the midst of a church that helps grow them to be faithful. It's one of the missions of this church, and I hope you'll join us and be part of that important mission. So we're going to stand and sing. If you have any needs, elders are going to be at every door as you leave.